From the entertainment capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, it's Midnight in the Marshaverse, starring Marsha Warfield and her two sons, Stephen Roberts and Gills Hudson, as the problem child.
Well, good evening. Welcome. Well, good evening. I always say that because I'm a night person, and so everything is evening to me, but to some people it's morning. It's midnight in the Marshaverse, and welcome. Thank you so much for being here. Tonight we're going to have a special show. I think all our shows are special, but tonight we have a special guest, one of my favorite content creators. I fell in love with him during the pandemic. We've met and hung out a little bit, and I'm sure you're going to really enjoy our conversation. Our guest tonight is Dilla, Sherman Dilla Thomas, because everything dope comes from Chicago, and he'll explain that in a little while. But first, we're going to have a little cannabis and cognac, and like we usually do. This week, we're going to revisit some old favorites. I will introduce one new product. I found these Endo tabs. I don't know nothing about them, and they terrify me, so we're not going to do those. But I'm just, if anybody knows anything about them, what they do, how they work, let me know, because I'm waiting until I can get a group of people together and we can try them together, because I've never done that, and they look interesting, but it's the kind of thing, you know, like a ride, a roller coaster ride, where you have enough sense not to get on it by yourself. That's the way I'm looking at them tabs. But I do have a sister product to that. This the same company. This is Endo. They have Endo Puff. And these little disposable vapes, they're very discreet and they're pretty doggone potent. So I'm going to have a little bit of that. After I have a little bit of the National Black Cognac official. The official cognac of the cookout is the Hennessy. So we're going to have a little Henny. It's going to pop like that. Pour it into our snifter. Just a little bit. Because, you know, if you want to join me, have whatever kind of refreshment you like, whether you'd like a lollipop, or want to smoke along with me, have a nightcap. Once a week, we get together and chill. And so it's okay. Whatever it is that makes you feel good, as long as you ain't hurting nobody, including yourself, feel free to indulge. So let's pretend like we know what we're doing and have a sip of cognac. Thank you, Paul Mooney. I told that story too many times before. And now we're going to have a little bit of this strawberry lemonade. Oh, yeah. We are ready now. Tonight's show, I want to talk about R&B. I love R&B. And every show, I make a playlist to accompany the show. Since we can't have a soundtrack, I make a little playlist that you could play along softly if you chose, or you can listen to at your leisure. And it's auntie music. For me, auntie music is the kind of music your favorite auntie plays that's a catalog of her entire life, you know. So I have songs on there from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and beyond. But I asked the question, because I've been fascinated lately with the Chitlin Circuit. I think that it's an isolated moment in a larger, much larger story of progress, from field songs to hip hop. And so I asked the question online on my social media. I just said, who invented rock and roll? And almost to a person, even though there was no consensus as to who, which individual invented rock and roll, just about everybody said somebody black. So it's understood, and it's always pretty much been understood, but it's always been told from the point of view of people who like rock and roll, who are predominantly white, and they tell the story from that perspective. And, you know, I often say that history is not written by the winners. History is edited by the winners. And they always cast themselves in a starring role. So the contributions of the innovators get cast as incidental, when in reality, the music of Black America is pretty much the soundtrack of segregation. It's the soundtrack of a people from the time they arrived in this country until today, where we have a Black woman running for president. You can tell the whole story of Black American history through our music. And I was born, like I said, to R&B. I am an R&B baby. That's my thing. But R&B was also the catalyst for rock and roll, which most of the documentaries and literature I've read, just about everybody says that rock and roll is white people playing R&B. And so we have these names, different names for one music. You know, it's one music, it's Black music, and it's defined by its situations. Field songs are field songs because they were singing them in the fields, but the songs they sang for celebration, the dances that they came up with for celebration, like cakewalks, had a different music, had a different tempo, because those situations were different. And as those situations changed and progressed, you see the music change, and new instruments are incorporated, new experiences. You know, we go from the oppression and horror of slavery and all that, to people moving in the Great Migration, to better times, to, as Stevie Wonder kind of illustrated in Living for the City, where he tells a whole vignette of somebody getting off the bus in New York, skyscrapers, and how that must have energized the people, those new experiences, new sounds. And they got up north by train, and how the train represented so much, and how it wove its way into the music. If you listen to a lot of songs from the 60s and 70s, you can actually hear a sound from the drums and percussion that moved the music along and moved the mood and the ability to innovate. So you now have people playing jazz, having for the first time instruments and things that they didn't have before, and could express things in a way they were never allowed to before. So all of those things fascinate me. And I like to, you know, it's a huge subject. There's so much you can tell about what was happening to us through our music, that I would love to delve into that more. You know, I have a thing about Black history museums and history, but I like to present it in a celebratory, grateful kind of way. I mean, because this music, it doesn't just, you know, make me want to dance or make people want to dance. It's visceral, you know, it moves me in a whole lot of ways. And as I get a little older, the music also adds a nostalgia, an element of comfort from appreciation of those days gone by. And so now where you have young people who have moved on from like the chitlin circuit into their own entrepreneurial juggernaut, whatever that word is, how they've created a whole industry and all the ancillary industries that take to support it. All of that is the soundtrack of segregation of Black people in America. And so I hope to explore that more often. There are a whole lot of videos and documentaries and articles online about this. And I, like I said, love the music, and I hope you'll listen to the playlist and let me know of any song situations. People, there are people who are still alive who have run boarding houses where musicians stayed, who have seen concerts, have sheet music, all kinds of stuff that I would love to know more about. So let me know how you feel about that in the comments and all that kind of stuff. And if you have any stories, I'd love to hear. Midnight in the Marshaverse is brought to you by Aunt Karen's Suburban Seasonings White Crackers in a Can. Aunt Karen's White Crackers combine your love of salty white crackers with your sense of fiscal responsibility in one convenient can. Just like tater tots, chicken nuggets, and Pringles, Aunt Karen combines scraps of first-run baked goods, Suburban Seasonings, GMOs, and tons of preservatives to bring you a dazzling array of flavored crackers for any occasion. And best of all, Aunt Karen's white crackers in a can have no expiration date, because she knows old crackers never die, they just fade away. Whether you need a plain white cracker to serve as a base for the kids' afternoon peanut butter and raisin snack, or a fancy, refined, flavored cracker to accompany your elegant dinner party crudité plate, Aunt Karen knows just the right cracker for you. When it comes to dessert, Aunt Karen's specialty line of Lindsay's Rainbow Grahams with sprinkles are equally at home with hot dogs and meatballs, or as crusty bottoms for the guilty pleasure of homemade s'mores fudge brownies. Look for them down on the lowest shelf wherever you find sweet crackers. Thank you, Aunt Karen. It is time for me to introduce, as I said, a young man I very much admire. I became aware of him on TikTok during the pandemic. And he was doing these history moments about Chicago, because back then, TikTok, you only had a minute. And so he was doing these history minutes about Chicago, and they were fascinating. And they were very detailed and well done. And I was very impressed with them. But I was more so taken, and this is going to sound weird, I was taken by the fact that he was being so eloquent while speaking in his own language. And that doesn't really seem like a luxury to a lot of people, but for me, grew up code switching, not just in school, but at home, everywhere, you spoke in a different way that you were supposed to act right in public and be eloquent. To see all of these young people now embrace themselves and express themselves and do such wonderful work, it just fills me up. I'll let him tell you his own story. Ladies and gentlemen, would you welcome a young man I'm very, very proud of, Sherman Dilla Thomas. Hi, Dilla.
Hey, good. Like you say, good evening. Good morning.
good morning. Good day. Good tomorrow. We are both from Chicago, right? From pretty much the same area.
Yeah. Arvin Gresham. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so you went to what high school?
Calumet High School.
You went to Calumet too. You're Indian. But we have a very few years in between us, but it's a pleasure to know we went to the same school and have so many distinguished alumni. What were you doing before the pandemic?
I was working for the light company, working for ComEd here in Chicago. As a high voltage electrician, and you know, I'm a dad of seven. Before the pandemic, I think the number was six. and then, yeah, just a husband and just a regular guy who we routinely bore his friends to death with all these Chicago stories anytime the occasion would present itself. And then the pandemic had us stuck in the house. And I have a, she'll be 12 in a little while, but at the time she was eight. And she was really excited about TikTok. And I thought instead of us trying to dance or do what everybody else was doing on TikTok, I thought it'd be a good idea for us to kind of tell Chicago stories. And she didn't want to do them. I did them to kind of encourage her. And compliments are addicting, you know. I started getting compliments about the video, so I kept going. And it's been an amazing journey.
What was the first thing that happened to let you know you were really on to something? What?
I would say, can I get the shot in there? It's right behind me. I ended up being on the front page of the Chicago Tribune for telling these history stories.
Okay. Yeah, well, so, you know, I know what that means, being from Chicago, you know.
Yeah.
What were your dreams? They ain't gonna let you do that thing you had in your head growing up.
Oh, what I'm doing now, being a public historian. I thought you needed to have a PhD in a tweed jacket with elbow pads on it, in a pipe, right? In order, you know, in a smoker's jacket, in order to be a historian. And you know, I would talk about history to my teachers or people in my neighborhood. And you know, I was like, that first thing was like, you know, well, you got to go to school. And I went to college, but I didn't go get a PhD or anything like that. And so I didn't know that it was possible to be a public historian, you know, without all of that. And I'm glad I didn't listen to them because, you know, I am indeed a public historian.
And you got been recognized by the city. You've gotten all sorts of accolades. I've seen you on your social media traveling all over the world.
It's been insane. You know, I got to tell the story of the Black liberators. It was some Black soldiers in World War II that freed Jews from the Buchenwald concentration camp. And I got to tell that story in Jerusalem, right? Like, it's been crazy. It really has been.
All right. And then you got a bus tour that I have been blessed to take. Fascinating tour. You are a fascinating guide. Very interesting person to listen to. How did that come about?
For me, at least, it was like a natural turn. I was telling all these Chicago stories online, and even like mostly the Chicagoans would say, oh, I didn't know that was over there, right? I've been driving by the Forum my whole life. I didn't know what that was. Or, you know, I didn't know the parking lot next to the Harold Washington Cultural Center was where the Regal Theater was. Or, you know, these type of things. And so I felt like that would be the next best step to take people out so that they learn the history of the spaces that they in every day. You know, we all walk on sacred ground and sometimes we don't act like that. And I think if you made aware of who was there before and what they was able to accomplish from that same space that you in now, it should inspire you. And then the other part of it is I'm very like Chicago arrogant. So, you know, right now in the news, Chicago is always like everybody's punching bag, you know, Democrat or Republican. If they want to make a point about something, they're going to bring up Chicago. And so I started also doing these tours to kind of combat that. I wanted people that came to visit Chicago, as well as like the corporate folks. I would say 60% of my clients are probably folks from corporate spaces. They work in Chicago, but they don't never cross Cermak Street, or they don't never cross Western Street. And so I wanted them to know that it's a lot of amazing stuff on the other side of those particular streets, and the people from those sides of the street in the city are just as amazing. And it's been really, really successful. We took out 200 delegates during the DNC here in Chicago, which was fantastic. We take out all the sports teams now, so when they bring in new players, we give them a neighborhood tour, so they're not regurgitating the bull jive they hear on other stations.
Correct. Yeah, I applaud you for that. You mentioned the Regal Theater, and as you might have heard in my rant in the beginning, the music that fueled Black people along is fascinating to me. And Chicago played a significant role in that. It was one, a destination on the way on the Great Migration. It was also a hub. All the tours began and ended in Chicago, because yeah, you could go all over the country from that hub. And we got a lot of music early, like all the Motown music came to Chicago first. The Motown shows came to Chicago first. But Chicago had its own recording industry.
Oh, yeah, right. One of the...
What do you know about that? What can you tell me about that?
Well, I doubt I'm going to be able to tell you anything, but maybe your listeners didn't know that, you know, Sam Cooke was one of the first Black men to have his own record label, and he had that here in Chicago. And it was so independent-minded, but it go all the way back to, like, Black Swan Records and the Ma Rainey, right? And she recorded her music here in Chicago. It's exactly like you said, we had that connection to the train, so the music can spread. But even more importantly, we had the Pullman Porters. And the Pullman Porters were able to take those records all around the country and introduce them to people. And so, you know, Chicago, that's why the blues in a lot of spaces are called the Chicago style of blues, right? You know, it was invented in the Mississippi Delta, but we raised it. You know, same thing with what they call jazz, right? It was invented in New Orleans, but we raised it up here. And it was pioneering. You know, I think about the amazing Curtis Mayfield and how he was scoring movies before other people were, right? You know, Sparkle and all these other movies. That was rare. It's you know, Berry Gordy started to pick that up after him, right?
Because but Quincy, I think, was first.
Yeah, Quincy as well, another Chicago. And then I heard you in the beginning talking about, you know, everyone said a different name for who invented rock and roll and how it morphs from R&B. And one of those early names is Sister Rosetta Tharpe, right? Which is an amazing Chicagoan. So, we was right at the precipice of all those things. It was Rosetta Tharpe that taught Les Paul how to play the guitar left-handed, right? So,
okay.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. Amazing history.
All those stories, you can get so much history out of, not just how they had to perform, where they had to stay, how they traveled, and all of the, as I said earlier, the other service industries that had to come up around them, since they weren't allowed access to the quote-unquote mainstream places. So there had to be places to sleep and places to eat and churches and all kinds of things, cleaners, you know, people to do everything they need, somebody to drive, people to protect them. And so we don't hear those stories enough, and how everybody would end up in the same boarding houses, in the same, yeah, whether you were a doctor or a Pullman porter or a jazz musician or a hooker or crap dealer, whatever, yeah, you were going to end up in those same places. And the kinds of things, I'm sure a lot of civil rights and other plots and plans were hatched in that kind of environment from people at different points in our history. I'd love to explore that more. If I had my dream, if I had my way and this show was taken off, I'd hire you to tell us some of this history once a week, you know, little 5-10 minute segments, whatever.
I would love that, because it's so much about it. And I love the point you bring up, because you know, sometimes Black folks can be, was conditioned into us to be judgmental against each other. It's exactly how you said it. In those boarding rooms, we found each other's humanity, right? You know, you might have been a traveling preacher who thought that, you know, Nat King Cole singing to the girls was too raunchy and against the Lord, but you end up in a boarding house with him and you see that he's an elegant person and he wants the same things you want. And I agree with you that a lot of plans for the urban leagues and the NAACPs and so many things come out of those shared spaces, but then just, you know, everyday kind of advice for each other, right? You know, sometimes people have a lived experience before you, and when y'all able to get in those same spaces, they can kind of help you avoid those potholes, which at the end of the day lifts up the whole entire race. So, you know, I would love to do those.
And you know, that was intentional. It wasn't incidental. It was intentional. They meant to, you know, form those resources. They meant to build those alliances. They meant to do those things. We were not bystanders to our own history. We were very much involved in our lives. We raised children. We traveled. We built stuff. We worked Yep. for ourselves. You know, we did what any group of people does. We did have community. We do, you know, the whole we don't stick together. It's insane. We yeah. always stick together. We get in trouble because we stick together with people. Well, this is my crew. It's yeah. your crew. My yeah. crew don't like your crew. But still, we still, you know, as soon as you get a dollar, here comes, you know, cousins and yeah, come on. And we'll put you on the payroll because I know what you can do. You can be our stylist. And a lot of hip hop style that's now, you know, around the world came about just like that. Berry Gordy found Project Kids
yeah.
and dressed them up and made them superstars. Just people just like us. And so, like you said, it does give people a sense of self. And especially when we can look at them, you know, it's like looking at your kids and saying, I'm so proud of you. Look
yeah.
at what you did. And we can do that. And if nobody else is going to, I will be that mother who says, I am so proud of y'all. Y'all have done. Did you know what you did?
Yeah.
And I thank you for doing that, too. I appreciate you. I wish you all the best. And you and your family, that's when we met, you were obviously a caring family man. You seem to have all your ducks in a row and may attribute some of it to luck or whatever, but I don't believe that.
You know what they say, that the Lord look at the babies and fools, and I sure ain't no baby. And I want to say thank you to you. Sometimes when you're we have this notion of make it big or this or that. And sometimes when you're chugging along, particularly me being mission minded, right? I want to follow in the steps of the Black griots who orally tell our stories to inspire. And sometimes you hit these walls to where you don't think you're growing as fast as you should, or you don't think enough people are watching. And then out of a blue, a person who, you know, is the mother of comedy, who gets mentioned when, you know, the biggest comedians, particularly the biggest women comedians, they all say your name as a person who inspired and as a person who laid out the blueprint. And so to have you give me that hat tip, you understand how that pushes you forward. That, you know, Miss Warfield is a smart lady, and so if she think what you're doing is all right, you know, you must be doing something all right. So thank you for that acknowledgement. It does propel me forward.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate you. I know you got to run. I know you're a busy man and got so many things to do. But thank you for spending a few minutes with us tonight. Okay?
Well, thank you. I'll see you soon, hopefully.
Come back again anytime.
All right. Bye-bye.
Good night. All right. That was Dilla Man. I adore him. I think he's just a wonderful example. And not just an example, because that just sounds like he's the only one doing it. I see so many young people online. I love social media. and I spend so much time online listening to young people and reading what they write and listening to what they say. And they're so smart. You know, I don't have kids, but I just want to go, just come and give Granny a kiss. Because I think they're wonderful. And tonight, I have two wonderful young men that I call my own, my two sons. And we're going to come bring them out. And we're going to talk about what we've been talking about and maybe talk about some new stuff. So, if you're ready, it's family time in the Marshallverse. And I'd like to start by introducing my oldest son. This young man is not only a funny comedian and who I met with Rain Pryor a bunch of years ago. He's also the producer of my one-woman show, The Book of Marsha, and lots of more stuff. But won't you say hello to my oldest son? It looks just like me. Stephen Roberts. Hi, Steve. Are you eating crackers?
I actually was eating crackers.
Well, today. I noticed you were not eating graham crackers.
You know what? One can only go so far for one's culture.
Oh, we can always take it further.
Always.
But did you know Dilla? Did you know of Dilla?
I did know of Dilla. I knew of Dilla from a few different sources. But I know the majority of stories from you. And he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's so amazing. And I can't wait to take one of his tours. I had some limited time. I was only in Chicago a month ago for 3 days. So I wasn't able to do it. But if you know anything about Chicago, if you've ever taken any kind of tour in Chicago, you know that they're all really fascinating and so many layers upon layers. And so I can't imagine that it would be any different just from a history perspective.
It's a great, and he's very engaging as a tour guide, you know. So, it's fun. And I would love to, you know, take you guys and see and show you Chicago through my eyes and see it from your perspective.
Oh, I would love that. That would be so much fun.
So let me bring out your brother so everybody can know why this would be such a good time. So let's bring out my youngest son, my problem child. Everybody has one, but that's the special one. I love him. I love him. I love him. Won't you say hello to Skills Hudson? Hi, baby.
I thought you just said you ain't had no kids and then you gonna introduce us.
I know.
It's like, I don't have no kids, but let me introduce my kids.
See, I got this thing. I can have it like that. I got it like that. I got kids and then, I ain't got no kids.
And then Steven get on a cracker eating a cracker.
Oh, you got that. Oh, good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good job.
Yeah, well, you could have ate a brownie. Anyway.
No, that's how he got kicked out of the Cub Scouts.
Anyway, honey, did you know Dylan?
Yes, from TikTok. From TikTok, I did. And I didn't know that he was going to have to leave. I was ready with my question. I wanted to ask him about the Grand Ballroom on 63rd. To ask him, like, if he had a story or history about it, because I used to dance, and I would, when I was a kid, and we would, the dance group I was in, we would go there, and I wanted to ask him a question about that.
The Grand Ballroom, where was that?
On 63rd, in Cottage Grove, at 63rd in Cottage, right there on the corner.
That was one of the places where the DJs would have dances. Would throw dances. Herb Kent had the Times Square for years, and then he moved to another place. And then the Capitol Theater started having dances in the 70s when I was going to high school, and we used to go to those dances, and that was not far from the Green Bunny, and we used to go there, and we weren't supposed to. Anyway, that's a whole nother story. But you heard me talking about Black music and its soundtrack of segregation.
Yes.
Did you not? And how one of the iterations of that was R&B, which was my era. But R&B seemed to have birthed a lot of children. And for you both, they would have been probably, thank you, honey, for setting that mood.
Here we go.
different impacts. So, Skills.
Yes.
Auntie Music, when you was growing up, what was the music that you heard as a little kid?
It was more that like, how can I describe it? I would say like, it wasn't like, would it be Motown? I would say probably more Motown, you know what I'm saying? Or more like Muddy Waters, damn it.
They're right there together. Motown, Muddy Waters on Motown. That would be an interesting album. But no, I get what you're saying. Chicago is well known for its Motown influence, like we were talking about earlier. And the blues, you know, that I still listen to the blues. And even as a kid, little kids in Chicago can sing the blues, just like they can sing Jesus Loves Me. What do you know of the connection between R&B and hip hop?
You said, what do I know of the connection? Now, yeah. I over the years, I started to realize the connection. I didn't, but, you know, the sampling of music, the repeat of ideas, or, you know, bringing the ideas back and like certain songs, like I heard of Biggie Smalls and P. Diddy with produced the some of the tracks that were like Hail Mary and Blue Notes, you know, which when I first heard it, I just like, oh, that's, but then as I got older, I was like, oh, that was an actual, and this was years before that, you know, right. And people was covering this song also, you know, that didn't look nothing like us, that, you know what I'm saying?
Do you ever listen to rock and roll?
By accident.
You almost made me spit out my water. Okay, good answer. All right.
Steven. By accident.
Steven, the cracker eater.
Yes.
And you can take that any way you want to.
I usually do.
Okay.
Oh.
What do you know about R&B?
I mean, I know what R&B is. But I also know that it sounds like a lot of different things too. I think really modern R&B can be, especially as it is influencing LGBTQ people, go all the way back to Ma Rainey. I looked up this because I knew we were going to talk about this. And so I looked up, I knew there had to be something about Ma Rainey in it. And I did not realize she has a song called Prove It On Me Blues. And there's a line in it that's, I went out last night with a gang of my friends. They must have been women because I don't like no men.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, well, there's the birth of LGBTQ music right there.
Yeah.
You know, and because, and we've talked about this before, gay, lesbian, bisexual, trans, all of those people, the advantage we have is we come from all cultures and all families and all walks of life. And so we do what, especially back then, 1920s, 1930s, but even back to the 1890s when Noel Coward was around, you know, Noel Coward snuck things in all the time. And so did Ma Rainey, just as that example, was sneaking things in because, you know, LGBTQ people had to be sneaky. We had to be sneaky in everything we did. We had to have speakeasies. And we had to, you know, be in the closet, and we had to be in the know and on the down low and all of that stuff to survive. So you just snuck it in movies and snuck it in places. And then, you know, as the 70s came around, you started not sneaking it in so much. There's Sylvester and the Village People and on and on.
in the 20s and 30s, 40s. You didn't have to sneak it in. There were Gladys Bentley and Moms Mabley and others, sure, who have, especially women. And you don't hear too much about the men, right, but it seems like there was a pretty free atmosphere.
I would argue that it was still somewhat fringe, and that of course was still in the metroplexes. It wasn't, you know, much beyond the big city. And it was also bolstered by England. England, I mean, with Noel Coward and a lot of other people, a lot of trends came from the UK still. So there's that
too. So who are some gay icons with an R&B or bent that maybe fueled disco and other kinds of music?
Well, I mean, for sure, Sylvester. Sylvester is always the first one that comes to mind. I'm embarrassed to say that I cannot remember the other disco, and I bet you will, music recording artist that recorded music in falsetto just like the Bee Gees. And I can't remember his name right off the bat right now. But he was one of the people, you know, they put black people and disco and gay people all in the same
club.
Yeah. I was talking about the, you know, racists and bigots, and they were very happy to put us all together there.
Sure. And all of us were anti-American scum. Right. Pretty much to, as far as mainstream was concerned.
Donna Summer, Diana Ross.
That was interesting. How did I remember when that song came out, when Donna Summer came out. In fact, it was, must have been 1976, 75, 76, because it was when I got to Los Angeles. And Love to Love You Baby came out, and that was a huge scandal. People have no idea that there was a huge sexual revolution and how it manifests itself and how that played into the music and how it was exposed to people.
And Bad Girls?
Bad Girls came a little later. That was a strike at the phone company. My mother was a union steward, so I remember things on different signposts than other people. But we went from the repressive kind of uptight Doris Day, Tammy 50s, mm-hmm, and into the 60s to where it was now with the hippies came with the free love. And the next thing you know, there's porn. There was no porn, but now we not only had the theaters, we had the technology. People used to have, you know, 8mm cameras if one person in the neighborhood had one. And then when they had their Hefner-inspired key parties, they might pull it out in a scratchy old movie from Sweden. And people, it was just a whole different time. And suddenly now you could go and spend a dollar and a half and go to a mainstream movie house and see pornography. Right.
For real? No, there.
Yes.
So you can go watch porn with other people sitting next to you.
That's how you did it, Skills. That's how you did it before.
Behind the Green Door, Debbie Does Dallas, Long John Silver, they're just John Holmes. And so we tend to think of the past in the same frame that we live in, but it was a whole entirely different time.
Can I read to you some of these titles of some of, sure, these songs?
Which songs?
Some of these back in the day songs that had questionable lyrics about gay people that kind of come from this R&B, because there's Bessie Jackson, Lucille, who's also Lucille Bogan.
Okay.
And BD Woman Blues or BD Women Blues or where's it? Ain't No Sweet Man Worth the Salt of My Tears. Where's Where is the one I like? There's a really good one. I'd rather be Spanish than Manish.
Okay. Did you know that in the 30s there was a song called My Girl's Pussy?
Oh, no. Oh, yes. I think I did, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
She's My Most Intimate Friend.
Ooh.
And then Noel Coward had a song in his musical Bittersweet called Green Carnation. And Green Carnation was something that was already happening. If you were a Nancy boy, if you were a gay man, you wore a green carnation on the street, and that's how you identified each other.
Ah, and nobody knew.
Right.
I mean, it's a green carnation. You got to really go,
there you go. Out of your way
to get a green carnation. I mean, come on. But as the music that you might have grown up with, I mean, it's like even hip hop. As hip hop, when it began, there was an element of fun to it. They had people like, you know, Heavy D was fun. And yeah. Kid and Play. And I don't see so much of that. It was also very much community uplifting. It was about empowerment. It was too much, too many people. It was, people telling their story and trying to lift the community. In the 80s, it got angry. It took a whole different direction, but so did the country.
Yes.
That was the Reagan era, and we became inundated with crack and all that kind of stuff. So the music doesn't fuel all the change, but sometimes it does. But it reflects a lot of different changes, even though there's the constant in that these are this is the music of the children of the children of the children who came before them. I just think it's really an interesting kind of way to look at it. Like in the 60s, the civil rights movement had its anthems, its songs that not just, you know, ain't gonna let nobody turn me around songs they marched to, but also songs of the time. James Brown, I don't want nobody to give me nothing, open the door, I get it myself. And Curtis Mayfield did a lot of protest songs. And then the Staple Singers, I'll Take You There, and Respect Yourself. The music, like I said, reflects our story in a way that's engaging and informative. And I would love to learn more about it and talk more about it. I got a ton of documentaries loaded up on my YouTube for me to get into and just hear those stories. They're amazing. I want to rant. I know I'm doing all the talking, but I want to do a rant, and you can do your rant on how the lady does all the fucking talking. But too many rant. I'm seeing a lot of online about people who can't bring themselves to vote for a woman. More than people there, I'm not seeing people admit, like, I just can't vote for a black person. Nobody's saying that. But it keeps coming up, people saying, men and women, that they just cannot vote for a woman for president. And I just want to go through the TV and snatch people's wigs off and slap them with it. What the hell are you talking about? You can't vote for a woman. It makes me nuts. Do you think that you have to have testosterone to lead, to be effective on a world stage, when what we need is somebody who understands power and diplomacy, who understands how to talk to people, to get cooperation. We need somebody who will take a different tack that's not all bully and bluster. And it couldn't be more clear. The person, the real strong, fearless person, the one who will go up against bullies and call them out, is the one you say you can't vote for because she's a woman. I just don't understand how we get here and how we equate power with physical strength and the willingness to use violence. That's not power. That's a last resort. Power is to be able to converse like an adult when you have global situations that have massive consequences, all of them. You want somebody rational, but who's not afraid to sit and talk to people. And so it makes me crazy to hear all the misogyny and sexism that we have been indoctrinated with being spewed out against this woman at a critical time when we need this woman. So I would encourage everybody, please vote. Please vote for the person, the best person. And there's no comparison. One person is sane and the other person's a narcissistic, lunatic criminal. There's just no more to say.
Today, I went in and voted early voting today, and I went and voted. But see, my silly ass, I'm up in there, I'm in the line, and I'm wanting to yell out who I'm voting for. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, these people, cause like I was the youngest one there, right? And it was two other black people working like in the booth area, right? And you know what I'm saying? When I walked in, I dapped up the one black dude. And then I wanted to tell the lady, I wanted to say, Kamala. And then what I liked about this time, I really did my homework. Every time that I voted, I always just voted for the president. And then I would I wouldn't even vote Democrat or Republican down the whole ballot. I would just go by the names, whatever name that seemed catchy to me. But I would always vote the top of the ballot. But this, I was all the way from the judges, everybody. But I felt like I wanted to say it because the other side, they feel so emboldened with being able to speak for them. I wanted to be like up in there, yeah, cobble up in this bitch and walk out. You know what I'm saying?
I had lunch with a friend who I have just recently been getting to know. I know this person from another organization. And so we've been going to lunch once a week, and that's been nice. And then inevitably, the whole election subject came up, and I tread lightly. Sometimes I just don't want to know. I don't want to know because then my opinion of you is going to change if you tell me that, you know, that you're a Trump person and then we can't be friends anymore, you know, because if you support Donald Trump, you don't support me. You don't, and you don't support my friends. So, I mean, you can't, you really, right these days, you really can't have both. So anyway, was at lunch. And they told me that they are independent. And they said they didn't know who they're going to vote for, but that they felt like they couldn't vote for Harris because she was a joke. And I chose not to go any further with it because I'm like, how is she a joke? So this is not, I don't agree with her policy on such and such. I worry that she might make a decision here that would infringe on what I like in the law now. Or that we do not, it used to be that there was always a big time in the election where people would cry, let's get back to the topics. Let's get back to the issues. That's gone. That is gone. We're going to talk about character. We're going to talk about who's stupid and who is not stupid and who's fit for presidency and who's not fit for presidency and who's an idiot and who's just lying. And there is somebody who is doing that. There is someone who is gaslighting his own followers. There is somebody. It's not her.
No.
It's not her.
No.
And I can at least respect that somebody would just come out and say, I don't want to vote for a woman. You know what? At least you were honest. At least you didn't say it was because of this or that, or that she's an idiot or she's a joke or any of that. You just said, she's a woman and I don't want to vote for a woman. Actually, we can work on you on that one, you know?
But it's deeper than that. She's a woman of color.
Yes, it's, yes.
And having her at the, you see, a lot of people saw Obama as a get out of racism free card.
Yes.
If we vote for him, then you can't ever call racism again.
And we're done.
And we're done. Well, we knew it. Black people knew that wasn't going to fly. But people were really convinced of that. They don't have that sense with her. They have, I think, the sense that she's going to hold them to account, that she's right. going to fundamentally implement all of the things in that Project 2025 is designed to keep from ever happening.
Correct.
And so,
as an issue, abortion was always like, we'll talk about it, but we're not really going to talk about it. But we're not really going to talk about it. But we're going to throw that out there as a warning signal that you better shut up about it. And Harris doesn't do that. Harris just, boom, we're talking about it. We are talking about it. And yes, it,
but we're not talking about the
change
fact that
in that whole thing. I'm sorry.
We're not talking about the fact that the reason why there's an abortion push is because there are not enough white babies being born.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's been the reason for the push against abortion all along, because white people have convinced themselves that if they were to ever become a statistical minority, that the other minorities would rise up and eat them. I don't know, something just weird.
And the white people.
They eat the white people.
They eat the white people over there in Atlanta.
And again, we have to make the caveat. We're not talking about all white people, but we are talking about a system based on those fears.
I'd like to throw a flag out really quickly about we're not talking about all white people. I don't think you should have to say that any longer, because I think that everybody knows you're not talking about all white people. We can either start saying bigots, which is all white people who discriminate against the whole list, or you can say white people as a culture have had a problem with racism, homophobia, on and on and on. We all know it. We all recognize it. It's there whether we like it or not.
Yeah, but, you know, it's kind of like don't eat the aspirin, or, you know, don't let the baby play with guns kind of stickers we have to put on everything, or else, you know, people get mad and call you all kind of names and stuff.
Let me give an example. The press has started to not disclaim like that when it comes to lies that Donald Trump, and it took them, Donald Trump would tell, it took them like 8 years to finally get the balls to just go, no, we know this is a lie. It is a lie. We're going to call it a lie. And we're not going to spend a whole lot of time doing a story about whether something is a lie or not. We're just going to call it a lie and get on with the story at hand. And I think that's the same thing as not all white people. I think we all know that America is struggling with race, and that the people who are making it, who are not doing well on the struggle, are white, straight Christian people. We know that. So
because gender, but gender is as big an issue, and which absolutely. Is why it's become one of the, you know, trans.
I include like, that with all of it.
There are like 8 trans people in the world, and I mean in the country. It's not like, you know, there's going to be a trans uprising, even if there was some sort of danger represented. It's just an overblown scare issue.
Tactic. It's a scare tactic.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, they're not going to castrate your son during recess.
At school.
Yeah, during recess without your permission and with the like, you know, the little.
What you mean? Trump said that you can go to class and your son come back a daughter.
Well, that's what happened to me.
Yeah, right. That's going to happen. But there was something that came to me in my mind, but I wouldn't have been able to retain it even if I wasn't.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. Anyway, I've enjoyed this time together. If I was Carol Burnett, I'd sing her song. But I appreciate sharing family time with you and talking to Dilla and to the people. What are you doing?
Oh.
Were you fading out?
No, he was holding his ring camera up to the...
It was like the light was just taking him out.
No, it was the like, oh, well, I forgot this a week early. I thought this was Halloween week. I was doing
Oh, you were being spooky.
Wait until next week.
It was the night before Halloween.
I was working in the lab. Anyway, I'm going to have to go send him to his room. But I appreciate having this conversation, and I look forward to learning more about how the path to freedom on the Black hand side. I would love to look at those kinds of things that have been taught to us from the perspective of people who have a particular motive and point of view. Well, we have a different point of view and different motive. So I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. Now, I'd like to explore that segregated history a little bit more. Among other things, we have so many things to talk about here in the Marshverse and our perspective here. And maybe one day I will preach a sermon from the Church of Jesus, because I think we've all lost our way and are about to end up in Oz watching a naked emperor fart on all the kids. I think it's time for me to start preaching. But
I think your service will be long.
My sermons will be long.
Yeah, like those Baptist churches.
No, my sermons. But I did want to say, given all that that is and where we are now, I think that if Kamala Harris becomes president, we should change the national anthem to One Nation Under a Groove.
One Nation Under a Groove. Get down for some good.
Yes.
And I'm into it. I'm down.
I love it. You're down.
I'm down with that.
I wanted to interrupt y'all early so much when y'all kept saying about sneaking it in. Yeah,
I know. Did you know I was about to say slip it in? And I thought I cannot say that because he will fall out of his chair.
Oh, yeah, wow. I was already when y'all, and Mom said, Oh, I sneak it in too. I'm like, y'all some sneaky motherfuckers.
What do I sneak in? What did I say?
We were talking about gay people having to sneak around.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And I said sneak around on purpose because I knew, because I was about to say slip it in.
And but y'all kept, the way y'all kept saying it, y'all kept saying, we're sneaky. We sneak in. I'm like, oh.
We have to sneak around.
Well, we did.
We did. Okay. And we had to sneak it in.
Yes. So,
and next time we'll talk about the Village People and we'll Madonna and we'll talk about early days, like I said, earlier days of hip hop and all of the house music coming out of Chicago.
And trance and EDM.
All that kind of stuff. All of that comes out of that same train leaving out of Mississippi.
So, yeah.
Thank you so much for coming. If you like what we've done here, please like, comment, subscribe. Let me know if you know anything about these tabs, these glow tabs, or any other kind of tabs. You know, they're fortified weed edibles. It's deep. So if you know anything about it, let us know. If you have any questions, if you have any suggestions, if you have anything you want to talk to me about, put it in the comments.
We'll give you a shout out.
Yeah. So tune in next week. We got, can we tease next week?
Let's do it.
Next week we have, who you think we got, Skills?
Vanessa Mitchell.
There you go. So we're going to have Finesse on
exciting.
Next week. And I look forward to seeing you here and spending family time with my two sons. Y'all be good. Take it easy. Good night.
And vote.
Vote.
Or comma.
Or don't go. Or don't vote.
I approve this message.
Got a way no one can do it like that. Her own style, no one can wear that hat. Hey, don't you know that the queen is back? She's back, she's back. She withstands the test of time. When it comes to strength, she comes to mind. Get down, she gets back up.